Some trade updates from around the NBA. A couple of Ja Morant landing spots emerge, including one that I hate. Plus, Atlanta pivoting to trade for a different Mavs big man, and this deal will be even easier to get done than an Anthony Davis trade. And Trae Young maybe getting an extension with the Wizards. But why? I'm Trevor Lane. This is the Basketball Bulletin. Make sure you subscribe right here to the channel. Help us get to 40,000 subscribers. Hit that subscribe button. All right, let's get into it from Mark Stein talking about the Wizards and their reasoning for trading for Trae Young to begin with. Part of it was reaching the NBA salary floor next year. They had over $80 million in cap space. So adding Trae Young, who may or may not pick up that almost $49 million player option, that would help them get most of the way there. And then they can use their remaining cap space, either sign players, take on salaries via trade, help facilitate deals, whatever they want to do. I also see some benefit from having Trae Young's passing acumen out there on the floor with this young team. He's certainly a guy that can make the offensive end easier, even if he does make the defensive side of the ball that much more difficult. It is a little bit, as Stein notes, of a tricky fit for a Wizards team that has really been focused on adding length and athleticism and defense to their team. But financially, it does make sense to add Trae Young to their squad. And who knows, maybe the Wizards could wind up flipping Trae Young the way that the Brooklyn Nets appear poised to do with Michael Porter Jr. Not a guarantee that they're going to move on from MPJ. Stein says he's had pushback against that. John Hollinger says it's a lock that MPJ is going to be moved. We're just going to have to wait and see when the dust settles. But there's the possibility that the Wizards could rehab the value of Trae Young in a similar way to what the Nets have done with MPJ. However, as Stein notes, the Wizards are rumored now to be giving a two-year extension to Trae. There are already rumbles about Young securing a two-year extension from the Wizards, no matter how much or how little he plays for the rest of the season, with Washington desperate to hold on to a first-round pick that is top eight protected. So in other words, what Stein is saying is that the Wizards, their pick is top eight protected, and they are so concerned about losing it that they're going to do what the Toronto Raptors did last year with Brandon Ingram and just sit Trae on the bench all season because they don't want to lose that top eight pick. Right now, if the draft were to stay chalk, Washington would have the fourth pick. So Trae might play very sparingly for the remainder of the season for Washington. We still have a long way to go. We're not even at the halfway point of the season right now, but we may not see Trae out there too much out of fear that he might accidentally cause them to win too many games. So with the Wizards desperate to keep their pick, as they should be, frankly, especially in this loaded draft class, we may not see much out of Trae, but it may not be needed in order to earn him that extension. But why extend him? Well, if it's not a max extension, if Trae is willing to take less than a max deal, I could see where the Wizards could keep him at a positive value. And that's the important thing here. It's not so much extending him that troubles me. It's if it's a max extension, because I think a max extension for Trae right now, based on the way the trade market played out with very little interest in him, I would assume a max extension would be perceived around the NBA as a negative value contract. Now, obviously, there is a limit to that. And if Trae and the Wizards already have a number in mind that the Wizards feel comfortable will be positive value, then great. Go ahead and do something like that. I think there's a reason why the Wizards were rumored to be at the top of Trae Young's list in terms of trade destinations. Some of it certainly has to do with the fact that Minnesota and the Brooklyn Nets were not interested in Trae Young reportedly. But remember, Trae was moving teams in order to get paid. It's the same reason why Anthony Davis was, prior to his injury, looking to potentially leave the Dallas Mavericks. These players, same thing with Brandon Ingram last year, they're looking for trades, not because they want to be in a different situation, but because they're trying to find a team that will be willing to pay them on their next contract. So I believe the Wizards and Trae probably already have some number in mind. And if the Wizards feel comfortable with it and there's still the potential to flip that contract in the future, then you might as well go ahead and get him under contract for multiple years. Now, I also think there's the potential that Trae could really fit in Washington and they keep him. They don't have to flip him and rehab his value and all that. Maybe he fits, everything works out great, and they continue down the path together. But I just think the Wizards have to be careful with whatever kind of extension that they give Trae to make sure that they keep the option open of trading him and don't accidentally turn him into another negative value contract. That is frankly what they were able to take advantage of in their trade with the Atlanta Hawks. Didn't give up a whole lot in order to get him. All right, let's talk about Ja Morant potentially going to the team that last traded for a distressed asset, and that was Brandon Ingram last year. Could Ja Morant wind up with the Toronto Raptors? I think this is a really interesting thing, particularly when we look at the motivation behind Toronto to actually go and get a deal done. So here's the thing. According to Mark Stein, the Raptors might decide to make a play for Memphis' Ja Morant because there is some belief that Bobby Webster, who's now taken over with Masai Ujiri out, is going to face some win-now pressure to do something splashy like they did last year when they used pre-agency to go get Brandon Ingram. Now, Trae Young didn't have a whole lot of value out there on the market. I would expect that the same will hold true for Ja Morant, that realistically what we're talking about for Ja is maybe some expiring salaries, some mid-tier players, certainly not the horde of young players and picks and things like that that the Grizzlies are hoping to get. Look, they can hope. I don't think they're going to get it in this market. $40 million under contract this season, $42 million next season, $45 million the season after that. I think he's a negative value on that deal. I don't see teams as talented as Ja Morant has been over the years. He's had a bad season. I don't think teams are going to be jumping for joy to take on that contract. And remember, contracts are mattering now more than ever. So could the Toronto Raptors ultimately be the team to go after Ja, given that there are some pressures placed on them to make some kind of a move? Well, that is indeed what the Grizzlies need to be looking for, is a team that is in some ways, maybe desperate is too far, but motivated to really go out there and get something done. Now, what I do like about Toronto as a potential landing spot is if they can include Emmanuel Quickley, who actually has more years under contract than Ja, $32.5 million. That is largely seen as a negative value contract as well. So if you're able to take Ja Morant and turn him into Emmanuel Quickley, well, for the Grizzlies, at least you have a solution at the guard position. You've got somebody that you can pair with Cam Spencer there in your guard rotation. Is Emmanuel Quickley negative value? Sure. But if you're able to get some other type of positive value somewhere else on the roster, what if it is Ochai Agbaji, who is rumored to be very available? Can you get Jacoby Walter in the deal? Certainly Colin Murray-Boyles, the Raptors would not be super thrilled about giving him up. But if you're Memphis and you can pry him away, that would have to be really interesting as well. For Toronto, you add a higher ceiling guard than Quickley in Ja Morant, add him to Brandon Ingram, Scotty Barnes in the very forgiving Eastern Conference. Maybe you've got something there, especially if you have belief that Ja can go back to being the player that he was a few years ago. This year's version of Ja Morant, well, frankly, he's not going to help a lot of teams win games. In fact, the Grizzlies are significantly better. It's not close, with Cam Spencer on the floor rather than Ja. So you have to buy in. If you're going to trade for him, especially if you're going to give up anything of positive value for him, you have to buy into the idea that what's gone on in Memphis this year, the bad vibes, have been holding back Ja Morant, and that better basketball is just a location change away. 19 points per game this season, that doesn't sound so bad. 7.6 assists per game, that's not so bad. Whoops, 40% from the field, 21% from three, and really poor defense. Again, having seen the Grizzlies play several times, or many times this year, I can say they look like a much more dangerous team when Ja Morant is on the bench rather than on the court. So are the Raptors going to be the team to roll the dice? There is another club that could look to do it, and it is one that I think absolutely, positively should not. We're going to get to them in just a moment. If you've been watching the show, you probably know who I'm talking about. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Sleeper. You guys know they do a fantastic job. We talk about them all the time. You can use our code Bulletin, and it's a great way to help out the show as well. If you use the code Bulletin, that way they know that you came from us. And plus, you get a $100 deposit match up to $100. So go check out Sleeper. The link is in the description down below. Sleeper has their picks options, which you can see on the screen right now, which is a lot of fun, very easy to play. But they also have live stats with real-time updates and visualizations on all their stats, a great news feed with lightning-fast updates, and a real-time chat where you can engage with other users. So it's not just about playing fantasy sports. It's not just about making picks, though certainly those are a lot of fun. But the Sleeper app really is very well-rounded and offers a lot. So go check it out. Use the link in the description down below and use that code Bulletin. Get a $100 deposit match up to $100. All right, let's get into, of course, the Sacramento Kings and why they could wind up, I hope they don't, but could wind up being the landing spot for Ja Morant. We talked about this yesterday, Donnie and I did, that the Kings are not expected to pursue Ja. I was highly in praise of that decision. However, Mark Stein, oh no, I must confess that some chatter to the contrary over the weekend has circulated, suggesting that Sacramento's position could change if Memphis was prepared to accept a package headlined by DeMar DeRozan, Devin Carter, and some level of draft capital. Sacramento needs to build out a team of young players, sustainable defense, and move forward from there. They are a far cry from that right now. They're not close, but that's ultimately where they need to get to. And they're going to have to hunker down, do the work, and ultimately get there. It'll take time. Ja Morant is not putting you on that path. Ja Morant is keeping you on the path you're on right now, even if it is DeMar DeRozan that's on his way out. Unless the Kings fully believe that they can turn Ja Morant into a centerpiece player once again. Now, would he put butts in seats? Yes, he can do some very exciting things, but I just don't think that he's the right fit for them. Now, the price tag, DeMar DeRozan for Ja Morant, okay. You know, DeMar still gets it done, but let's face it, he's not part of the long-term future of this club. He's 36 years old. Next season, under contract for $26 million, but only about $10 million of it is actually guaranteed for next year. So when we look at DeRozan, that's an interesting acquisition for the Memphis Grizzlies in that he's somebody that, you know, you can put him out there on the floor this year. You probably prefer to move him somewhere else in a three-team deal. Devin Carter out of favor in Sacramento. It's a young player, at least, that Memphis could have some interest in. And then some draft capital. Obviously, you have to add more salary to this to really make this work. Then when we look at cap space, they do have $7.6 million below the first apron, the Sacramento Kings do. So depending on who those other salaries are, you're getting Ja Morant. You can look at it this way. You're getting Ja Morant without getting into Keegan Murray, without even giving up, you know, perhaps Keon Ellis in a deal like this. The question will be, what is the draft capital? Like, if you're touching future first, no. If you're Sacramento, you have to do everything you can to hang on to your future first. You absolutely need those. So I think it's a difficult sell for me. If you're telling me that it's DeRozan and then Devin Carter and nothing else of consequence, and all you're giving up is, say, second round draft capital, okay, maybe the value is just so good that you say, you know what, we'll roll the dice. Maybe we can rehab Ja's value and flip him down the road or something if we do start to build out this younger team. But even then, it's tough for me to think that Ja Morant going to Sacramento makes a whole lot of sense. Zach LaVine, the Kings are heavily rumored to be looking to move him. The Bucks are potentially a suitor there. Domantas Sabonis, they're looking to potentially move there. The Toronto Raptors are a team that's had some interest, but the Kings don't want to take back the long-term salaries that the Raptors have. So that would be like the Emmanuel Quickley, maybe even an RJ Barrett, something like that. But my question is, if you're the Sacramento Kings, why would you suddenly be willing to take back Ja Morant's contract, but you're not willing to take back any contracts from the Toronto Raptors to move on from Sabonis or LaVine? And I'm not saying that not being willing to take back long-term contracts from the Raptors is the wrong decision. It's more that you shouldn't be willing to take back the long-term contract of Ja Morant if your plan is to clear the books and create as much flexibility as possible. And that's why you're not willing to take back contracts from the Raptors in a Domantas Sabonis trade. So there's some kind of disconnect here. I don't know what I completely buy. I still have hope that the Kings will not make the move to go for Ja Morant. I just don't think he fits the direction they need to go in. And I tend to buy from a believability perspective that it just doesn't make a lot of sense for the Kings to be the team to go after them, with the only real reason to go after Ja, with the only real reason being because it's the Kings, right? That's kind of what we all fall back on. The Kings have done dumb things in the past, so why would they not do a dumb thing now here in the future and go after Ja Morant? That's the only real rational case I can make for the Kings being the team to trade for Ja. But nonetheless, Mark Stein does caution that he's hearing their name come up as a potential landing spot for Ja Morant. Now, I did say that Atlanta could potentially be going after a Mavs big man. By the way, the Knicks have not fared so well after winning the NBA Cup. Stein noted that this continues a trend where teams struggle after winning the NBA Cup. I continue to believe it's because you're playing so hard during the tournament and you're pushing to win those games that there's just a natural drop-off after that. But James Dolan believes this roster can win a championship. He may not be wrong, but that's part of why they refuse to hang their NBA Cup banner. That is still an absolutely absurd and ridiculous decision and very selfish decision by the New York Knicks to not hang the NBA Cup banner. I think it is absolutely absurd that they won't hang that up when teams prior to them did what the Knicks are doing by not hanging that banner. I don't care whether or not they think they can win a championship this year. Oh, we're going to go win a real one. That's a completely different thing than an NBA Cup banner. They should absolutely be hanging this one because what they're doing now is making it a question in perpetuity. Now teams are going to have to make the decision. That was the whole point of stressing so heavily that the Lakers hang their NBA Cup banner, that the Bucks hang their NBA Cup banner. And now you have the Knicks in the third year of this tournament deciding not to hang it. Now it becomes a question. Whoever wins year four, it's going to be, do you hang it, do you not? Had the Knicks just hung the damn banner, then everybody would say, this is what we do. We hang the banner, and this is the precedent. It's been set, and we're going to follow along with it. Now the Knicks not only are making this decision for themselves, but they are also throwing it into question for the future, all because they believe they can win a championship now when you haven't done that since the 70s. I mean, great, have confidence in your team, but there's nothing that stops you from doing it. It's not like if your players look up and see that NBA Cup banner, that's going to somehow make them less motivated to win an NBA championship. I think everybody understands what the value is of the NBA Cup tournament championship and an actual NBA title. Raising that banner is not suddenly going to make your players go, well, we're good. I guess we don't have to play hard anymore. We don't want to win an NBA championship. Again, it's absolutely ridiculous. But nonetheless, this is yet another team that has really pushed in the NBA Cup tournament, won it, and then suffered afterwards. Now, let's get to the Hawks going after a different Dallas big man. The Hawks, league sources say, have been insistent that they were never willing to add former number one overall pick Zachary Sauchet to the expiring contract of Kristaps Porzingis, Luke Kennard, in an offer for Davis. But I have heard a rival executive too posit that the teams have the option of pivoting to Daniel Gafford that takes Reece Sauchet out of the haggling completely if they wish. Atlanta is said to have some interest in the Dallas big man alongside Indiana and Boston. So think about that. It makes a lot of sense if you are the Hawks and you believe you want to add another big. Now you've got all this flexibility too. You cleared the salary of Trae Young off of your books. Did they get a great return for him? No. If you told the Hawks 2 years ago that they were going to trade Trae for a veteran expiring contract and an okay role player in Corey Kispert, I think they probably would have just thrown up, just spontaneously thrown up on that spot. But it's a new reality. It's a new NBA. We look at the cap salaries matter more than ever. Players have to be producing at a level that their salary suggests they are. If not more, they need to be producing beyond their salary. And Trae Young was simply not doing that. And what this has done for the Hawks is opened up the flexibility to make a future move, to take on a bigger salary. And that's why they were seen as the prime landing spot for Anthony Davis. Now AD is hurt. So much for that scenario. That's out the window. But the Hawks could still look at things and say, we want to continue to improve our defense. We want to continue to improve our ability to defend at the rim. Onyeka Okongwu, there's some question marks on him. So do they actually go after Daniel Gafford? Now, the challenge is if you go after Gafford, it's very easy to get there salary-wise. And do I buy the Hawks didn't want to include Zachary Sauchet for AD? I'll buy that. But then what were you going to give up? Obviously, you're not giving up the Pelicans pick. That pick, whew, that could be extremely valuable. But to not be willing to give up Reece Sauchet either from the Mavs perspective, you'd have to look at that and say, well, then what the hell are we getting? Kristaps Porzingis, Luke Kennard, and what? What of any value comes our way? And a pre-injury Anthony Davis, you had to at least get some kind of value for him, especially optically from the Mavs side, where you just traded him in the deal for Luka Doncic that has been so reviled for Mavs fans to flip him for essentially nothing from the Hawks. I know that's what they just got for Trae Young, but to take that on, if you're Dallas, I mean, that would be an absolute gut punch. Well, the Mavs end up getting a different gut punch in Anthony Davis's hand injury. I think we're all bracing for that to be a significant absence. I think, this is me personally, I think there's a decent chance, based on the way the Mavs sit in the standings, that we've seen the last of Anthony Davis for the season. I'm not saying his injury will keep him out, but I think there's a decent chance that the Mavs, by the time AD is healthy, they'll be in full tank mode and looking to lose as many games as they can, and so they won't opt to bring him back. That said, Daniel Gafford, $14.3 million, very easy getting there and making the salaries work on a trade like that. Now, under the cap right now, the Dallas Mavericks, they are above the first apron. They're just $1.2 million shy of the second apron. As a team that's above the first apron, what that means is that they cannot take back more salary than they send out in a trade. So that could be a complicating factor for this. Though we go look at the Atlanta Hawks, take a look at them. Up $14.8 million shy of the first apron. What that means is that the Hawks can take back more salary than they send out. So who's a player that's less than $14 million, or could we do a multiplayer deal? Corey Kispert could be sent out in this trade, actually, because if he was sent out by himself, you can do that. What you can't do is re-aggregate players. So could you do a multiplayer player deal with Corey Kispert and Onyeka Okongwu, just to pick two names? No, not allowed to do that. What you could do is send Corey Kispert or CJ McCollum out by themselves. And then that would be allowable under NBA rules. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is certainly not going to go out. Onyeka Okongwu, I'm probably not. Maybe he would have been the missing piece from an Anthony Davis trade. I was surprised when he was made available. If it was Onyeka Okongwu, Kristaps Porzingis, which is really just Porzingis' expiring salary, plus Luke Kennard's expiring salary for Anthony Davis, okay, you're getting Okongwu. Like, that's at least something interesting, and you're getting something from the Mavs side. Maybe that was the answer to the question of, if Reese Hoshea is not involved, then what is Dallas getting back with positive value? But would I flip Onyeka Okongwu to get Daniel Gafford? Probably not. Gafford is a good player. He's an interesting big to add, but you don't want to give up anything super significant in terms of guys that are helping you on the floor right now to get him. Otherwise, there's just not that much of a net difference, right? If you turn Onyeka Okongwu into Anthony Davis, okay, it's a big upgrade. If you turn Onyeka Okongwu into Daniel Gafford, how much does that really move the needle? The way you move the needle is by getting Gafford to add to Okongwu. And then you've got another option besides Okongwu, Porzingis, who is very rarely available due to his health situation, which is unfortunate. Hopefully he does get fully healthy and stay fully healthy. And Mo Gay, I mean, it's just not enough there. So if you are Atlanta, I'm probably not parting with Okongwu in that kind of a deal, but can you do something around the expiring salary of Luke Kennard? Could you add in a piece, a player somehow to make the math work on a deal? Obviously you're not doing Dyson Daniels or anything like that, but what about Ethan Newell? What about Beat Krejci? What about Keaton Wallace? Can you add some, stack a few players up, even one player into that? And then there you go. And then can you talk draft capital in order to make it worth it? Obviously not touching that Pelicans pick, but is there some lower level draft capital that you can add in? And then you've solved your big man problem, at least for the time being. You've added to your depth there at the position. Certainly not the quality of Anthony Davis, but it's an interesting pivot. If the two sides were already talking Anthony Davis trade, to just say, well, all right, let's talk Daniel Gafford then. And if Dallas, who certainly needs Daniel Gafford if they want to keep winning games right now with Anthony Davis out and Derek Lively already out, they need Daniel Gafford. But do the Mavs get to a point where they say, well, we don't really care about winning games at this point? Kyrie Irving should be back soon-ish. Hopefully sometime before the All-Star break, we see him back. I don't know exactly when they get him back out there on the floor, but it's possible by the time Kyrie is back, the Mavs season is already effectively done with AD gone. If the Mavs go on a bit of a losing streak, then maybe we do see them say, well, you know what? We don't care if we don't have a starting level center, because we're not that worried about winning games right now. Anyway, currently Dallas 14-25, just half a game up, on the Utah Jazz in the tank race. Sacramento right now sitting at the bottom of the tank race, but the Mavs have lost their last two. They're 3-7 in the last 10. I think they're on the verge of tipping to being sellers on the market at the trade deadline. And a Daniel Gafford trade, whether it's to Atlanta or otherwise, would really push them in that direction, especially with AD and Derek Lively already out. So stuff to keep an eye on. Could be a seller emerging on the market with the Dallas Mavericks in light of the Anthony Davis trade. The Ja Morant update, the Toronto Raptors being a team that's interested in him. Perhaps the Sacramento Kings. I hope not. I don't love the fit there in Sacramento in terms of what they ultimately need to become. I don't mind the fit in Toronto if they really believe they can get the best out of Ja Morant. And let's not forget an extension perhaps coming to Trae Young with the Wizards, which I think they have to be very careful with. It was a big part of why Trae was available for such a light price was because the Hawks and pretty much everybody else around the NBA said, we don't want to be the team to give Trae Young his next contract. I'm just seeing it now. I was on the other screen. Apparently, my camera flipped off again. When I did a couple of shows, and when I'm using my camera too much, then it can overheat and it switch off. Here, switch to my onboard camera. Apologies if everybody just saw a black box on the screen for too long. I don't know how long that's been off, but you could still hear me. So you got what I was saying. Okay, everybody. Great way to end the show. Appreciate all of you that have been here at the Basketball Bulletin. You guys are awesome. Now I'm looking down at everybody here, but appreciate all of you that have been here at the Basketball Bulletin that have been supporting us from day one. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Till next time, everybody. See you and stay safe.